B-Pod Studios.
They work.
Arr, matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Noontime hour here on Zolak and Bertrand. We started the day talking about Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving, who wants to start his own league. Yeah, no, I'm not kidding. Kyrie Irving, according to the New York Daily News today. A story that is up and posted by Stephon Bondi. Says that on a phone call with other NBA players, he talked the other day about, you know, his not wanting players to go to Orlando, but that with his Nets teammates, he talked about starting a new league. Yes. He also urged Nets players to skip the bubble and proposed that players could start their own league, according to a source. According to Bondi in a tweet, to give it some context, he says it's not the first time that Kyrie has floated this idea, that he has brought this up before with players, starting their own league. Our question is, first of all, why now? You're delusional. You're insane. The other thing is, what is the gripe with the NBA? What's the biggest problem with the NBA from his standpoint? I don't think this is a common thing you hear from NBA players, that the league is so bad they want to start their own.
Doesn't it seem like they have the best commissioner of all the four sports? Isn't their commissioner the best as far as having knowing the temperature of the room and understanding guys and giving the league what it wants and what it needs? You got guys making a ton of money, shoe deals. What's so bad for Kyrie in that league? Like, what at this point in your life do you say, okay, what, do you even know what it would take to start up a league? What the monetary value you would have to put on that? What you would have to do? What network would you put it on? You know, what city would it be in? Would you have to build your own building? Because I'm not going to give, if I'm the Celtics, you're not going to use my facility for basketball. He's nuts. Like, he's gone off the deep end. He's insane. Pissed he can't go to freaking Orlando.
I had a question earlier.
The guy changes his tune every day.
So teams are going to get 17 guest rooms for players to rent or, you know, to pay for and use for family. Why couldn't a player bring Kyrie as their guest? If he had a friend on the team who wanted him to be there. Could Kyrie go as a guest? Serious question.
He could go as a guest, but he wouldn't be allowed around the basketball. You know what I mean? He couldn't do the basketball stuff.
Oh, that's a good point. They could block him from doing those things.
He could do that. He could just have to stay at the hotel.
Well, he could stay at the hotel and work on the logo for the new league.
You know, yes.
They're going to need letterhead.
High-level meetings.
Yep.
Pete in Delaware.
They have nice conference rooms there. You know, he could have
what's up, Pete?
There. Yeah.
Hey, hi, guys.
Pete.
How are you? Hey,
good.
Guys. Kyrie Irving, I mean, when you guys just said that, I was not aware of that. I literally, my jaw just dropped. I've heard it all. That is unbelievable. How much money has he made? How many games has that man sat out in the playoffs? And no team he's on ever makes him happy. The man can't be made happy. So he's unreal. But, hey, guys, the main point I call, I was looking at the rules that these guys have to live by in the NBA, and I was thinking about the NFL. Like, if these guys are in a bubble with only the amount of players they have, how's it going to work for the NFL without a bubble trying to keep the virus down? And then, of course, you guys are talking about the Fauci thing. Did you also see where Governor DeWine in Ohio pretty much put a kibosh on the Hall of Fame game having fans today?
I did not catch that story.
Yeah, Mike DeWine came out and said, highly unlikely I would allow any fans in the stands for the Hall of Fame game. And that's coming from, you know, a conservative guy in Ohio. But he did say that this morning. So that I thought I found that a little interesting, too. I hope the NFL has a plan. But
well, I mean, to your football point, I think we're learning as we go here, right? And you see what's happening with some of these colleges at the collegiate level getting guys back in. Yeah, Alabama, 8 players tested. You know, see the Cowboys have a couple. Texans, you know, it's starting to pop up. And you're watching it. You're seeing how do we adjust to this? That's step one. I'm with you, though, Pete. I mean, I got to think the NFL's at least talked about this. Like, they're planning to go forward and play. What would happen if we had a massive outbreak, say, in our quarterback room or on our team or on our coaching staff? Coaches are getting up there. I wonder how concerned Bill is with it. Now, he's late 60s.
So, seeing a new report from Taylor Rooks that it came out last night. I'm not familiar with Taylor Rooks, but verified account, works for Bleacher Report.
I think she used to be on Yahoo. She does a lot of NBA stuff. She gets a lot of big interviews with NBA players.
All right, so she's tied in. It says, sources tell me Kyrie Irving never stated that the Nets should begin their own league in response to the bubble. I'm told that after that report came out, he left the group chat. Like, on iPhone? Like, that's what we're talking about?
Yeah. I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
Kyrie has left the chat.
That's what happened. He got upset and he left the chat after that report came out. And apparently there are other players who are on the call that took to social media and denied that it was true.
So if he never said it on the chat, why would he leave the group chat?
That's a question I'd like to know.
Yeah.
If it's a false report, does he think someone in the chat made it up and spread it to a reporter? Why would he have any reason to think it was someone on the chat, even if it was, you know? It just doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense.
Why did he leave the chat then?
Yeah.
He's just completely out of his mind. He is. He's gone from what's the food and beverage, uninvited, to you shouldn't go to Orlando, to we need to start our own league in the course of like a week. And maybe he has only, maybe the we should start our own league isn't new, as Bondi clarified in a tweet that he's been, this is not the first time he had brought it up, according to his report. Jason Tatum's reluctance to play, according to that same report, Jason Tatum has some issues on coming back out of fear of injury. We'll get to that next. And also, again, AJ Schnock, director of Long Gone Summer, coming up in about 20 minutes.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Consider them part of your benefits package.
That was the dumbest 30 seconds we've ever had on this show.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
(617) 779-0985. Also a part of this New York Daily News story today. A line about Jason Tatum. It says, according to his source, Boston Celtics forward Jason Tatum, who is eligible for a max extension in the offseason, has expressed reluctance to play for that reason. Does this make Jason Tatum wrong? Does it make him right? Does it reflect on him as a basketball player in any way? Because he is concerned about his financial future. I don't think it does. I don't think it reflects on him as a player. And we talked about it earlier. And, Jim, I think you think it does. It reflects on him as in terms of who he is.
It's a tough one because I would be with Jim on this, too. Like, normally I would be wanting to jump all over him. But this is such a unique situation that I don't blame people really for questioning, you know, when things get stopped and now I got to ramp it back up and doing what those guys do and running the way they do. Like, it just all seems weird.
If the Patriots were, I don't know, 8-3, right? The number 3 seed in the AFC.
Yeah.
And the season gets stopped in November. They ramp it back up in January. You're okay with Stidham saying, no, I'm not going to do this. That's the scenario we're in.
Yeah, but I mean, it is comparable, I guess. I mean,
because if Stidham gets off to an 8-3 start, he's a guy that's probably going to get paid, right? Most likely.
Sure. Yeah.
So you got to. That's what I'm saying. Like, if everyone's consistent over all the sports, then fine. But that's the same situation we're in. I think Stidham would get killed and say, look at him. Look at him. Look what he's doing to his team.
Maybe the NBA guys have too much voice.
The problem with Stidham
here.
Is that Stidham hasn't accomplished anything. No one even knows if Stidham's any good. He's never played.
And for all I know, a lot of these football players do that anyway because they don't have the same type of guaranteed contracts
that you get in other sports.
Well. But it would be a lot easier.
Stidham. Name another quarterback that would be comparable then. Whatever quarterback you think would be comparable. Before he gets paid.
Somebody who's guaranteed to get paid a bunch of money before they've been paid that money?
How about
money?
Patrick Mahomes?
All right, well, Tatum's not Mahomes either, if you're going to go there. Well, how about Deshaun Watson? He's Deshaun Watson.
Sure, okay, right? Deshaun Watson. Great. Deshaun Watson, he's going to get paid. He's going to get paid a lot of money.
So Deshaun Watson's 8-3, and then they restart the season, and he says, nope, I'm out. You guys are cool with that?
I'd be upset.
If he starts out 8-3 and then there's a 4.5 month break and he's hesitant to come back, I don't understand why.
I just think it's so different from like a quarterback coming back into a game as opposed to, like Zoe said, like the amount of running that these guys have to do. Hockey players, the same thing. Like to go from zero to playoffs, it's different. And it's almost like
a controlled, glorified summer league they're going to or something. It's got a weird feel to it. This doesn't feel like the NBA finals, you know, that you're going to head towards that. And what are you really going to bring that trophy down there and pass it out? I guess.
Well, what does that have to do with the injury, though?
You don't think they're
going to play as hard?
No. That's why I'm not, like, blaming him here. But normally I probably would, is what I'm saying. It's just such a weird, unique situation that, I don't blame the guy for being concerned because it's been so freaking long since they played. And he's got all that money coming.
I just think it's different, too, for a guy who's like one of five out there. And without Tatum, look, the Celtics don't have a chance. And I grant you that. But it is different than the quarterback that you can't play without him. You can't. I mean, what are you going to do?
Right.
Can't do it. You go to your backup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Edelman.
And plus, it's a different scenario. We have to put ourselves in the mindset of a football team, going through what the NBA has gone through. We can't say that right now about the start of the season because the NFL hasn't been interrupted, really. You may be thinking differently about it had the NFL been interrupted mid-season or toward the end of their season, then took a bunch of months off, and then they just want everybody to show up and start playing again. Your feelings on this might be different.
I just don't think that a guy looking out for himself should be held against him. Because is he truly saying, I'm not going? So let's play it out. If the insurance policy doesn't come through, do you think he's going to play?
I think he is.
Yes. I think he is too.
He will not leave his team.
But do you blame him for wanting an insurance policy?
No. Like, what's the big deal about the insurance?
He wants an insurance policy. He doesn't want to pay for it. That's the bottom line, right? He's using his leverage of not playing over that.
Yeah. Correct,
that's the way I look at it. He wants to not pay for something, so he's using it as leverage to try to get it, and he's saying that he won't play. So is he bluffing or is he not bluffing?
He might be, but why is it wrong of him to ask the league to pay for it?
It's not wrong for him to ask the league to pay for it. It's wrong for him to say, I'm not going to play. That's
you understand, he didn't say that. You can't hold it. He didn't say he's not going to play. But you understand that the league has a lot more to gain in this than the players.
So the report is reluctance to play. Is that report wrong then?
No, I wouldn't say it's wrong. To say you're reluctant doesn't mean that you're not. It means you have hesitations about it.
So it's just more concerned. NBA drama, you're saying?
No, I think it's just the definition of the word. Like, he's not eager to go play right now without knowing whether or not he's going to risk, Isaiah Thomas, the example you brought up earlier. That happening to him. He also plays on a team with a guy by the name of Gordon Hayward, who had a catastrophic injury a year ago that he probably looks at and says, what if that were to ever happen to me? Like, what if that were to happen to me now? Gordon Hayward's got his deal. He's got his money, right? I don't. What if that happens to me and I'm not the same player after that?
Mm.
That might be impacting his thinking as well. Maybe Isaiah Thomas is impacting his thinking. I don't know. Could be a lot of things. But to, like, say that, you know, blanket statement that, you know, Jordan wouldn't do this, so he's not the killer. You know, can he be the one? Can he be the guy to lead your team? Is he a guy you want to build around? I would say that he still is. Kyle is in the car. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, Kyle?
Hey, I just want to say I'm totally on Jason Tatum's side. I think we're brainwashed to think that you should be loyal to the game. We see what the NCAA players are getting, you know, pushed around money-wise. He is the quarterback of the Celtics. People compare him to Kobe. Kobe compared him to himself. So that's how I look at it. You gotta take the money. Like, they don't care about you at the end of the day, really.
Well, and I agree with Beadle. There's nothing wrong with asking. And it's not like he's demanding, saying, I'm not going to play. He and another group of players were in similar situations. And, hey, if you want us to restart under these unique circumstances,
yeah.
And if they say no, and the policy, according to Wojnarowski, is around $500,000, Jason Tatum, I have $500,000 laying around where he can plunk down on a policy.
So wait, is it $500,000 per player or $500,000 for that group of players?
Oh, I would think it would be per player. You're talking about contract.
That sounds high.
$500,000.
Well, for $100 million contract,
I guess.
Yeah,
if
he's taking out a policy to make sure it's worth $150 million.
Yeah, they're not going to insure $1 billion worth of players for $500,000. I wouldn't think.
Yeah, it's like 0.2%, 0.3%.
Yeah.
So he has to come up with $500,000 on his own? How much is he?
He can't even buy a basketball coupe, so.
Right, yeah, can't even afford it. Can't even afford
it. It sounds
ball.
Personal for you, Jim.
I want guys to be there for their team. That's all. That's what I want. I want guys to be there for their team. That's a general opinion that I have about sports. The caller brought up Kobe. I think Kobe would have played.
Like, the unfortunate part is,
of course, Kobe
that
would have played.
And look, he could probably do it. You know, he's made.
Oh, you don't think Kobe would have played?
It's just my opinion. I think just the way he is, the way mentality.
Okay, you know, Mamba mentality over there. You don't think that he would have asked for an insurance policy too?
Maybe. Would he have threatened not to play?
We don't even know that Jason Tatum has threatened not to play.
Okay, I'm just taking the report on its surface.
Okay, saying you're reluctant does not mean you've threatened not to play.
What does it mean then?
It means that you are the opposite of
I'm just
going to
complain about things?
Play. Hesitant is what you are.
No, there's an implied.
You're hesitating. You're not enthusiastic about it.
No,
you're not eager about it.
I agree, Jim. There is the underlying theme of this goes beyond hesitancy or reluctance. Hey, would you guys be willing to fork over $500,000? Tatum's made $10 million in his career. Yeah, half of that's gone. He's got a net worth of, he's got endorsements, whatever. But he's going to take a certain percentage of his net worth right now to plunk down $500,000 on his own policy. That hurts. With the league, hey, I'm going to ask you something. I don't want to get hurt in this quick ramp up to the playoffs and expect it to go out there and go full bore right before I'm supposed to sign the first big deal in my contract. You want us to go play. There's a handful of guys in the same situation. Would you be willing to insure us against future earnings? No? Would you be willing to cover half of it? Maybe? Okay. Can we talk about that? No, we're not going to talk about it. At that point, he might say, not worth it. Not playing. And that would suck. And that's it. And then we have a different conversation. But the conversation right now, is it wrong of him to ask? It's not wrong.
Here's a question. Can the team pick up the tab? It would seem like a impermissible sort of salary cap benefit of some sort. I don't know the rules on
right.
that.
It kind of seems almost
can
like
the Celtics pay it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Can they split? Can they go, you know, halvesies on it? Something?
Halvesies.
Halvesies.
Go Dutch on an insurance
go
policy.
Go Dutch on the insurance policy. Let's get to A.J. Schnocke is the director of Long Gone Summer. It was on Sunday night. McGuire, Sosa, he's the director of the documentary. We have some questions for him about it, including the subtitle for McGuire. We'll do that with him coming up right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
They're the office gossips of Boston sports.
It doesn't matter about games and outcomes and scores. He got fingered.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub, and simulcast on NBC Sports Boston. We welcome in a guest on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. He is the director of a film we talked about last week and talked about at great length again on Monday. It was Long Gone Summer, 30 for 30 on ESPN, and the director, A.J. Schnock, joins us now on Zolak and Bertrand. A.J., how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good, doing AJ. Well. As I mentioned, we talked about this a lot before and after it aired on Sunday night, and the thing we were talking about on Monday maybe the most was the subtitle for Mark McGuire. I think it was the only subtitle in the entire film, and it was when it appeared that Mark McGuire said he didn't regret PED use, but the subtitle said he did regret it. How did that subtitle come to be?
Because some people heard it the way you apparently heard it as well, that he said that he didn't regret it. But, you know, when we were there in the room and, you know, in the context of everything else that he's saying, it's pretty clear that he said that he did regret it. And other times in other places when we were talking to him, he said he regretted it. So we wanted to clarify, because it does seem like a contradiction of the other things he's saying at that time. You know, it's, you know, that he is saying I did regret it, not that I didn't regret it.
So we did see other interviews. Jason Stark had posted an interview that he did probably 3 years ago. And we know that he has said in all these other instances, you know, I did regret it. I have regrets about it. That's been made clear. And we thought maybe, just maybe, because he was so comfortable and he was, you know, in the flow of an interview, that in a moment of just being comfortable and being in the moment, he let it slip out. So that's not what happened.
No, I think it's more just he was saying "and I," and I think just in the way that he said it, it sounded like "Ida," and makes it sound like "I don't." But yeah, no, he didn't break news on that front.
AJ, how much did they limit you on the steroid talk? Because I watched the other Sosa documentary, and he walked out on Jeremy Schapp the second he went to the steroid stuff. But how difficult was that to sort of, I guess, tiptoe around without, you know, going too deep into it?
I told both of them. Yeah, I told both of them up front that we were going to deal with it. But, you know, I mean, the main goal of the film was, you know, to try to pierce through that framing that we all know about, which is that it takes place during the steroid era. Can we remind viewers, either who experienced it or people who are too young to have experienced it, just kind of what a massive event it was that transcended sports? But that we weren't going to gloss over the fact that it took place during the steroid era and during an era where players were, you know, bulking up a lot and using all kinds of supplements. So, you know, certainly when we got to that portion of the interview, you know, I don't think it was the favorite part for either of them to, you know, talk about those things, but, you know, they knew it was coming.
Was the steroid portion, if you want to call it that, the steroid portion of the film, of the documentary Long Gone Summer, it was on Sunday night on ESPN. Was that you sort of deciding that it had to be covered and it had to be a part of the story? Because I read your Q&A with the Chicago Tribune going back a couple of weeks, and I know that you had said that you really wanted to capture the way people felt and had fallen in love with that season and the home run chase. Did you feel like, you know, from maybe a journalistic standpoint, that this just had to be a part of the documentary? Do you feel like you could have gotten away without even covering it? Would that have been possible?
No, because I think one of the questions that I wanted to ask for myself as somebody who experienced it and for other people, you know, is what do you do with your warm feelings about that summer? You know, if you you know, did feel great about it, if you did think like, wow, this puts baseball back as the national pastime, you know, how do you reconcile with what you've learned since? You know, can you still look at it the same way? Do you trust the emotions you felt in the time? So I knew that we had to deal with that. That actually, you know, in terms of how various people who witnessed it, who we interviewed, I would have loved to have delved into that even more if we had the time. But that was certainly something that was a question I asked every person we interviewed, which is, knowing what you know now, do your feelings about that year change?
AJ, you said a couple of minutes ago that, you know, you didn't break any news or make any news on the front of saying, you know, I do regret it, didn't regret it. I don't know that there was any news in there, but what was the one thing that you wanted to focus in on that you felt was maybe underreported or under-talked about when it was actually happening back in 98? And did you get a chance to cover that topic adequately as you had wanted to?
Well, I really wanted to delve into the supplements part of this story, just because I think people forget how the Andros story broke, what that was in sort of the national conversation. And, you know, I mean, especially in light of what we see now, once again, between ownership and players, to see the union and the league, you know, issue a joint statement, basically shaming everyone for, you know, investigating the use of Andro or other supplements and speculating that it might tarnish the record. I mean, to me, diving in that section to what was going on in the game openly that everyone was able to see is really a foreshadow of what we would later learn involving steroids. They're really kind of two sides of the same coin. So I wanted to spend, you know, time in that, and that Andro wasn't the only supplement that was being used and was being used pretty openly. In terms of just other stories, you know, I do feel we got some stuff out of Mark and Tony La Russa and a couple other people, stories that we hadn't heard before that add some more detail to what we remember from that season, a lot of which I think we've forgotten just in terms of how close it was, that Sosa took the lead on a couple of occasions, and how long Griffey was in the race. So, you know, it was kind of just to reestablish all of the, you know, the things that happened in a chronological order as we experience them.
AJ Schnock, the director of Long Gone Summer, is with us. Did McGuire give you a lot more in the interview process than Sosa did? No, I didn't take a stopwatch to it, but it felt like we saw a lot more Mark McGuire than we did Sammy Sosa in the film. Is that because the interview was better or he gave more?
I mean, I think he came ready to talk about stuff he hadn't talked about before. He certainly talked about things I had never heard before. You know, just in terms of the balance between them, you know, I had told Sammy beforehand that one of the things that's so great, I think, about, you know, his role in this story is that he is kind of this surprise, you know, figure that pops out in June. You're not expecting him to be part of this story in the first 2 months of the year. And so the intention always was that we would not really reveal him fully until he gets to his, you know, 21 home run mark, or his 20 home run mark in June. So that was, you know, that to me is one of the most fun things about the race, and then how Sammy comes in and sort of transforms all of the conversation around the race. You know, I think just with Mark there, he had all these moments during the year because the expectation was on him from the beginning that he was going to be able to break it. The pressure was on him in a way that it wasn't on Sammy, and the way that they approached their desire to have the record, where Mark is writing down, you know, a list at the beginning of the year of how many home runs he has to hit each month in order to do it. And Sammy's just like, you know, look, I just want to try to get the team to the playoffs. I'm having the time of my life. You know, I got the national focus on me. This is great. You know, there's a little bit more tension in Mark's storyline that you can dig into a little bit more.
AJ, you've done a couple other films. I want to ask you, which was the most fun to work on? That Kurt Cobain documentary, which I actually saw, a little darker subject. Was it is it a toss up between this one, the Long Gone Summer, or the They Might Be Giants documentary? Because that must have been a good time.
Oh yeah, no, the They Might Be Giants was a really fun film to get to make. It's kind of hard to believe because we made it as they were approaching their 20th anniversary as a band, and we started in 2001. So we're now, next year will be their 40th anniversary as a band. Good it will God. Be as long since we made the film as it was for when they first started, so which is pretty crazy. That was lots of fun. The Cobain film was great because, you know, we went to all these locations. We filmed in places where he had lived, and I got to shoot on 35 millimeter film, which is, you know, maybe one of the last nonfiction features that will be shot on 35 millimeter film. But this was, you know, like to be able to go all over the country last year and go to a bunch of baseball games in parks I'd never been in before. It was just, that was a lot of fun. It was really fantastic. I had a great crew. This was a really fun film to make, and it certainly raised my expectations about how much I was going to enjoy going to the game this year, which of course has not bared out in the same way I thought it would.
Whoops.
Hey, AJ, last one from me. When you write something or film something, there's always stuff that hits the cutting room floor. Is there anything you regret not putting it in Long Gone Summer?
It's just like there's a bunch of different detailed stories that people told that, you know, were difficult to get in our time limit. I mean, the thing about, you know, when you're making something for TV is you have a hard out, you know, you're aiming for a specific number, and you can't kind of fudge over that. I think with both guys, there were things people said that I thought were interesting that I would have loved to have included. You know, in relationship to Sammy, I think that one of the biggest things I would have loved to have gotten in was just how the Dominican Republic really responded to this, and how Dominicans in the U.S. really, you know, rallied around Sammy all over the country. That would have been something that would have been great to have spent more time on. And certainly, you know, if we had the real estate to do it, I think the stuff that happened after that season, you know, them again having a big season in 99, everything that happened between Sammy and the Cubs in the aughts, you know, all those things would have been interesting to deal with at greater depth.
AJ, you just mentioned a minute ago shooting on 35 millimeter film. We did notice, and I noticed that at points in Long Gone Summer, you opted for brand new high def crowd shots in stadiums and fans and such, as opposed to some of the old grainy footage. Why was that?
Well, in part because of, you know, the experience that I had making the Cobain film and other films, you know, using footage from the current moment, shooting at places that are meaningful and evoke the feelings you're hoping to get across, but not trying to, you know, you're not trying to hide the fact that you're shooting right now. I mean, you're basically trying to tie the past to the present. We shot both. I mean, the old Busch Stadium doesn't exist, you know, but we shot in the new Busch Stadium in St. Louis, and we shot when the Cubs came to town. We shot there on their opening day. And the goal was always, A, you know, because the footage back from 98 is you know, it's, sometimes it's not great. but, you know, you want to be able to, you know, say that this isn't just a story that's rooted in, you know, a period 21 years ago or 22 years ago. It is, you know, it's something that, this rivalry, this enthusiasm for each of these teams, the history of the teams, you know, that still exists. And, you know, it's happening right now. So, there was no desire to try to, we're not trying to cheat anyone or fool anyone, you know, by including stuff we shot last year. We're pretty upfront about it by having a shot of New Busch Stadium. I think it's one of the first shots in the film after the opening. You know, we're saying this is a story that continues to resonate, you know, right now.
So was the downtown, you know, Main Street sort of shot toward the end, there was a Black Lives Matter sign in a window. Was that a late ad or was that already in?
Well, I mean, you can't spend much time in St. Louis without, seeing Black Lives Matter signs, posted all around town. Certainly after Ferguson, it's a big, topic of conversation, you know, last year, even before we got to our current moment in time. Having grown up in St. Louis and, you know, recognizing that St. Louis, when I was growing up, still today, you know, is a diverse city and also has a long way to go when it comes to relationships between its white and black and citizens. And so what I, you know, in all the stuff we shot today, you know, you're trying to evoke again, you know, a history of a place. And, you know, Black Lives Matter may be a new slogan, but it is not different than the St. Louis that I grew up in.
All right, AJ Schnock, director of Long Gone Summer. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out. 30 for 30, the latest one on ESPN. AJ, thanks for the time.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. AJ joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline here on Zolak and Bertrand. We wanted to follow up our conversation with AJ with some news about the baseball that Mark McGwire hit that was purchased for $3 million by Todd McFarlane. What's it worth now? There's a story out on that today. We'll tell you about it next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
How important is the opinion of a former NFL quarterback on other sports?
I don't think it's that important as people think it is. It's not as important as you think.
Zolak and Bertrand. It's the important part of your workday on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
First and third, two out.
Oh! In the field! Number 70! How much more can you give us, Big Mac? Number 70!
That's a great call. I don't know that I've ever paid close attention to that call. You know the baseball that he hit out of the ballpark for number 70?
Yeah.
I think Hardy referenced in passing earlier in the show something about the ball being purchased, you know, for huge money after it was hit.
Yeah, $3
million. Yeah, Todd McFarlane, the comic book guy. $3 million he paid for it. $3 million. Now, it might be worth as little as $250,000, according to a sports memorabilia auction house. This according to TMZ, stating that the ball's worth has plummeted. He bought it for $3 million. The final gavel was about $2.7 million, but after the taxes and fees, it was over $3 million. It was shown in the movie. In the film, Long Gone Summer.
Yeah.
Ken Golden, Golden Auctions, which is a very prominent sports memorabilia auction house. They're putting the value at $250,000 to $300,000. Yikes.
Just a car, buy a brand new car, drive it off the lot.
Can I? SCP Auctions has it as a little more optimistic at $250,000 to $400,000.
I mean, when we were watching the documentary the other night, I mean, yeah. I even had a moment where my jaw dropped because I had forgotten how much McFarlane had paid for that ball. And I remember thinking to myself then, I even thought back then when word got out that was too much money for that ball, because it just seemed like so much for having that one thing for something where you had two guys in the chase and it was... I guess it was my feeling like, well, this is a record that is going to be broken now. Well, I mean, you know, we all know what happened the next year. We know what Bonds did, you know, after that. But right. it was almost apparent to me at that time. It's like, this isn't the milestone that you think it is. You know?
Let's pick this up after headlines and talk about the $3 million baseball that now is worth maybe a tenth of that. Oh. And we'll talk more about this topic, sports memorabilia in general, right now. We'll do that in a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.